This is the State of Things from the American Tobacco Historic District. I'm Frank Stachow. Last month, two cyclists were killed in a hit and run. Ivan Skurlock and Alexandra Samu were struck on 15501 near Southern Village. It was one of a number of recent bike fatalities that have rattled the cycling community in the Triangle. North Carolina has one of the worst rates for bicycle and pedestrian fatalities in the country. Why is traveling so dangerous if you're not in a car, and what is being done to change it? That's what we're going to talk about on today's program. But first, that accident on 15501. I want to turn to Amaya Argote. She is a musician in the local band Des Arc. She was driving on 15501, and she found the bodies of Ivan Skurlock and Alexandra Samu. Welcome, Amaya.
Thanks.
So tell me about your drive home that evening, last month, right?
Yeah, it was the 19th of September, and my friend and I were driving home from a concert in Durham, and just south of Southern Village on 15501 South, I saw something in the road, which I thought was a soup can, so I sort of cleared it. You know, I drove over it with my car, and immediately thereafter, it's a very unlit portion of the highway, so it's sort of hard to see exactly what's in the road, but my friend was like, whoa, you know, and he saw first that there was much larger things ahead in taking up the entire right lane. And so I swerved over to the left lane. And as we passed, there were some piles of things, and then saw a bicycle, and which later actually turned out to be two bicycles that had been smashed together. And so closely that it looked like one bicycle. And so we just looked at each other like, I think that we didn't really understand what was going on, but half of our brain knew that that meant that those piles were bodies, and the other half of our brain thought that someone had just accidentally, you know, maybe a bicycle and some trash had fallen out of a truck. And so we pulled over and we ran to them, and it turned out to be two bodies in the road that were lying perpendicular with the median. And so we went to the first, to Ivan first, and he was dead already when we got there. But it was really difficult. You know, we're not medical people. We're musicians. And so, you know, we laid with him and trying to get a breath or some kind of signal of life. And I think, you know, when a body is dead and it's new, it's still moving, you know, and it still feels like there's life inside. And so I think it was kind of hard for us to understand. At a certain point, we did understand that he had already passed on. And Alexandra was the other person in the road. And we went to her, and she was very much alive, unconscious, but clearly alive. And so we sort of split duties between trying to flag down traffic and also just holding her and being with her. And the crazy thing that for us, both of us were, you know, sort of taking turns. It was late at night. There weren't a lot of people there, but just trying to flag down anyone to help us. Two cars ahead of us, the guy did stop as well, so he helped call the police. The car behind him, which was in front of us, just kept on going. And I am a pretty small, very non-threatening looking person. And I know that it was late at night, you know, it was like 11:30 at night, but I was just trying to flag people down, and they just kept driving by and rolling up their windows. And, you know, it was really hard to understand what was going on and why people wouldn't just stop and help these people who had been abandoned like that in the road. And so we eventually the police did come, and we went home, and we actually found a bike light in our pocket, which was still on. And realized that we had used them initially, picked them up off the road because they had bike lights, and Ivan, who was riding behind Alex, did have a reflective vest. But we were trying to use the bike lights to flag down traffic. And when the cop came, she needed help directing traffic, so we took her flashlight and started using that. And just without thinking about it, had put one of the bike lights in our pocket, and it was, you know, smashed, but still totally on. And That was hard. And yeah, so then I wrote a piece about it because I thought that it was really important. You know, I am in a band and I've lived here for a really long time. And I understood that the hardest thing in that moment was knowing that it was real and that it was really happening and that we were really finding these two people who ended up both dying. And I thought that if I wrote about it and tried to make it as real for everybody else as it was for us, that people in the community might take driving more seriously and the responsibility that it is to get behind the wheel every time you do it. And yeah, so I mean, I think a lot of people wouldn't keep talking about this, but it's felt like a responsibility I walked away with of always making this point to people.
What did you find out about the accident afterward when you went home?
Nothing.
But I mean, ultimately, what did, yeah.
I mean, about the details?
Yeah.
Nothing. I mean, it's, you know, mostly just trying to be in touch with their families, and there's not really anything to know. It was a hit and run, and there's...
Is there any way to know how long they had been there before you found them?
No, we were the first people to pull over. I mean, in my heart, I just hope that we were the first people to drive by them, and in which case I don't think it would have been very long.
On the state of things today, we are talking about bicycle safety in the state of North Carolina. It's a conversation that we will continue in a moment. We're talking today with Ame Argote, who is a musician who found the bodies of two cyclists killed on 15501. We'll talk more about bike safety when our conversation continues on the state of things from North Carolina Public Radio, a broadcast service of the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill. Please stay tuned. This is the State of Things broadcasting from the American Tobacco Historic District. I'm Frank Stasio. Today we're talking about bike safety in North Carolina. Laura Sant is a senior research associate at the University of North Carolina's Highway Safety Research Center. Lauren Blackburn is director of North Carolina's Department of Transportation Bike and Pedestrian Transportation Division at the North Carolina Department of Transportation. And Debbie West works for East Coast Greenway Alliance and is an interim board member of Bike Durham. And you heard the story that Ame talked about in our earlier segment, Debbie, and I wonder what kind of impact a story like this has on cyclists in this area.
It's very chilling when you hear about this, and I had read Ame's blog and when it was posted, and I really appreciate her, you know, putting that out there. It was very powerful to read, and I think that, you know, I did not know these people personally, but, you know, as a fellow bicyclist, it just, you know, there's the feeling that it could have been me, and that it's senseless, and they were doing what they were supposed to do. They were, from what I understand, in the correct part of a wide road that had a shoulder. They were in the correct position on the lane. They had lights. They were biking safely, and there's just, it's chilling. It also personally makes me feel like I bike because I love to bike, and it's fun and it makes me happy, and I want everybody to have a good experience doing it, and the more that we can make it safe for people, the more people we can get on bikes. And so I think that it is a real sobering experience when there's a fatality like that is so senseless, and especially a hit and run where...
Well, it's not the only hit and run. There have been several of both pedestrians and cyclists just in the past couple of months, right?
Yes. A cyclist in Durham, Seth Vidal, was killed in July coming down Hillendale Road. And again, a similar situation. He was a very experienced cyclist who knew what he was doing. He was biking. He had lights, he had a helmet, he was riding in the correct position on the lane, and someone who I assume it was a hit and run, but the person later turned himself in, and had lost his license for, you know, intoxicated driving. So I probably was intoxicated when the time that he hit Seth. That was very difficult for the bike community in Durham. A lot of people were close friends of his.
Laura, let me ask you about the statistics for bike and pedestrian accidents and bike safety in North Carolina.
Yes, in North Carolina, we see about 2,400 to 2,500 pedestrians hit every year and about 960 bicyclists. And within the Triangle region where these crashes that we're talking about have occurred, we see about a pedestrian hit every day and a bicyclist hit almost every other day. So unfortunately, these events are happening much more often than we would like them to.
Do we know how North Carolina compares with other states? I understand that it's you know, sort of in the top 10 worst states in terms of safety.
Yes, when you look at data from the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration, they're the record keepers for fatality rates and fatality data on the highways. North Carolina is ranked about 10th for both the highest pedestrian fatality rate and the highest bicycle fatality rate, at least with the latest data that we have access to.
So, Lauren, at DOT, what do we know what's going on? Any way to tell what might be happening and why we're so poor at bike and pedestrian safety?
Lots of different reasons. Laura and the Highway Safety Research Center has been working with us for many years on collecting crash information to help us analyze what those unique factors may be. It has many different behavioral sets, you know, how the driver is behaving, how the cyclist or the pedestrian is behaving, the environment, the built environment, if the conditions are right, if there is a facility for a cyclist, time of day, weather conditions, a lot of different criteria.
Well, all those criteria would apply in any state in the union. We're 10th worst. So what is any way to tell what combination of things put us at the bottom of the list?
I think one leading criteria is more to do with our region of the country, is being that our built environment was more or less deficient of building bicycle facilities for a long period of time, from about the 1940s to about the early 21st century. Really, only in the last 10 to 20 years have we started working diligently at local and state levels to build more facilities. That's a leading cause. Other factors, of course, have to do with the lack of those facilities and then the lack of ridership. You have an increased disawareness of cyclists being on the road and not being aware of the fact that you may approach a cyclist driving.
So, Debbie West, what's being done to sort of build awareness? Because in this area, particularly in the Triangle, I would think there's a growing number of cyclists and certainly a better awareness and wanting to ride bikes and be on your feet, right? I mean, this is a place where that's a pretty popular thing and growing in popularity.
Absolutely. I think there's a lot that's being done there. The local communities, you know, up to the statewide level is really looking at infrastructure and how do we do that. But there's more than that as well. You know, there's driver education, there's cyclist education, and there are a lot of groups that are involved and committed to this. You know, both the government entities have bicycle pedestrian coordinators who are working. There are quasi-government organizations, the bike ped advisory committees that work, you know, that do a great job of trying to work with the city governments.
And work with them to do what? What would you like to see?
You know, I would like to see obviously more infrastructure and more support for that. I think that's really important.
What would the infrastructure look like? What does that mean?
It really can vary depending on the area. So one thing, I, of course, work for the East Coast Greenway Alliance. And so greenways are really important part of the bicycle and pedestrian infrastructure here. And we have a lot of really fantastic greenways in the Triangle area. So, you know, helping develop those and making connections between them because, for example, the I-40 bridge on the American Tobacco Trail, that's a really important connection that is going to allow people to be able to bike a further distance than they could and walk a further distance. And it opens up a lot of access. So that's one thing. But also, you know, the on-road infrastructure is really important. And they do it carefully. You know, you can't just throw down paint and call it good. It's a whole study that's involved of, is this going to fit in this corridor? So you don't have bike lanes that just randomly end.
Right, and that's a big problem now. You have a bike lane for a while, but if you wanted to get from here to Cary, you can't really do it safely because it stops and starts and stops and starts, and the stop part is the bad part.
The stop part is – well, and you know, again, you can actually – there are Greenway connections, and the East Coast Greenway is part – our route goes from North Durham all the way to Clayton, and 85% of that is on Greenways right now. So it's really amazing that the Greenways really are important here. And the on-road, I think they are trying to make a lot of improvements. And also a big piece of it is education. You know, like Lauren had said, that raising driver awareness. If you're not used to seeing cyclists on the road, you don't know what to do. And people may not realize that, wow, you know, hey, slow down when you're next to me because your car is big. I'm small. I bike, and so it makes me a better driver because I know what it feels like.
Right. Well, Lauren, what does that take to retrofit the roads and the minds of drivers so that the infrastructure is better prepared? The stuff that's already there, mm-hmm. right? Especially those little narrow two-lane roads that are so characteristic of this area that were never meant for a population this big with no shoulder. I mean, what do you do about all of that? And again, the education part, is this a public, you know, safety campaign, a media campaign? How does that work for drivers? How does it work for the roads?
Mm-hmm. As far as the infrastructure is concerned, you work within the constraints that you have. In many cases, those rural roads, we simply don't even have the right of way to add shoulder to it. So that's where it's more of an awareness campaign that would help improve those facilities and that awareness. In more urban areas, maybe you do have an opportunity through an expansion project to add more to the roadway for bike lanes or sidewalks. So we work diligently through those opportunities. Over the last couple of years, however, I would say we put more of our efforts towards developing a safety campaign. One that we've been working on the most is called Watch for Me NC, and that's been a triangle level campaign, a pilot exercise. Last year, we primarily focused on pedestrian needs. This year, we've added in bicycle safety information.
Laura, where and when do these accidents happen most often? Do you have data on that?
We do. As part of the Watch for Me NC campaign that Lauren mentioned, we actually went back and analyzed 5 years of pedestrian and bicycle crashes to identify what the key issues were. And we saw that a lot of the crashes, more than half, both for pedestrians and bicyclists, are occurring at intersections, often when cars are turning left or right. And so a big focus of the campaign has been to raise awareness about these key areas where pedestrians and bicyclists and drivers should be extra aware of the others on the road and be looking before they're turning or crossing the street. So intersections are a big place. Parking lots surprisingly came up as a big crash area for pedestrians as well.
Time of day, is it more dangerous at night, more dangerous in the afternoon when there are more cars on the road?
For most crashes, we're seeing that they're occurring during the peak commute hours between 3 and 6 p.m. during weekdays, both for pedestrians and bicyclists. But when you look at just the fatal crashes, you see that the fatal crashes tend to occur more often at night and on higher speed roadways and involve alcohol use on the part of the driver and or the other party.
Texting has to be an important part of this, too. That little drift in the shoulder that didn't bother anybody when you were texting when there's a bicycle there can be fatal.
We're hearing more and more about the issue of distraction among both pedestrians and bicyclists as well as drivers. We don't have really great data from the crash reports that we review, but we do see that distraction plays a critical part in the ability of people to be able to recognize and stop for other people on the road before a crash occurs.
Debbie, what about the responsibility of cyclists? You hear a lot of drivers complain about cyclists breaking the laws. They don't, you know, they run stop signs, they run the red lights and all of that. What about their responsibility and what kind of conversations do you have in the cyclist community?
We do definitely look at that in the cycling community too. And I know I see folks that, you know, are riding on the wrong side of the road, don't have lights. And also you have to consider that a lot of people who are bicycling are youth who haven't had driver education. And so they don't know that, wow, you really need to stay on the right side of the road and this is how you turn safely through an intersection. So I think that, that is really important too in the safety. And I mean, myself as a cyclist, I know I've made mistakes and, you know, misjudged the speed of cars and zipped across an intersection and I've been lucky. most people I know are respectful of the laws, and you know, there's always going to be some people who just kind of blow through.
Well, and drivers have to understand what the rules are, that bicyclists, the cyclists are expected to be on the road and not on the sidewalk. So they are in the right place when they're on the road. And when there is no shoulder, that cyclist may have to claim the lane just for safety, because your judgment about whether you can make it between the oncoming bus and the cyclist on that narrow strip, I'm not going to trust that judgment. I'm claiming the lane, and you're going to wait another 5 seconds to get home. And also turning left, it means I have to get into the left turn lane with my arm out, and that means I look like I'm in the middle of the street. Only way I could make that left turn.
Right. And even when there are bike lanes, sometimes there's debris in them, or there's a sewer grate or something. And so there's a reason why, even if there's a bike lane, cyclists are allowed full use of the road. And sometimes drivers don't understand that.
I want to thank all of you for being on the program today. Debbie West works for East Coast Greenway Alliance and serves on the board of Bike Durham. Lauren Blackburn is director of North Carolina's Department of Transportation Bike and Pedestrian Transportation Division. And Laura Sant is senior research associate with the University of North Carolina's Highway Safety Research Center. Just ahead, we'll hear music from Ironing Board Sam. Stay tuned.